quarterback Kirk Cousins finally got the hell out of Washington. Good for him. Also good for him is that he will receive every one of the $84 million or so that the Minnesota Vikings have agreed to pay him over the next three seasons. That is a very big deal in the National Football League, which does not like to make contractual promises on which it cannot renege. Dom Cosentino of Deadspin wrote about the impact of the Cousins deal last week. He's also the author of recent posts, including Blake Bortles gets one more year to prove he doesn't totally suck, and an interview with a good boy in which he talked to a Labrador Retriever. Congrats on that, Dom, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. That was certainly a career highlight to interview a dog, I have to say.
Yeah, we might talk about that some more later. On Twitter, though, Doug Baldwin, the Seattle wide receiver, called Kirk Cousins a hero for all the young players that will follow after him. Is this fully guaranteed contract, precedent setting? And if so, how?
I think it's hard to say at this point, to be perfectly honest, because quarterbacks in the league, especially those in the top 10, 12 group, get effective guarantees for their deals anyway. Teams typically don't let their quarterbacks get away if they're pretty good, Washington being the obvious exception here. If the precedent's going to be set, it will take an Aaron Rodgers type or another star quarterback to insist on that, you know, but whether that will carry over, and the reason quarterbacks can do that is because there's a scarcity of quality quarterbacks around the league. There's a real demand for their services. They're not as replaceable as players at other positions. And the way the game's played now, they're not taking the kind of hits that maybe they did in the past that put their bodies at risk. So we're seeing guys playing into their late 30s, even 40s now. We're still waiting to see a defensive player or a player at another position have this kind of leverage to be able to get a deal like this, because it would have to be a shorter deal. You notice that Cousins just got the 3 years, and perhaps even less in terms of a overall money across the length of the contract. So I'd still like to see another player at another position get it before I could say that a precedent would be set.
Yeah, I find that totally convincing. I mean, you said that in your piece. Kevin Clark said it on The Ringer. I still think that it sort of expands the Overton window.
Right, right.
In the NFL, I was just looking, if I could make a clever pun, there is, in fact, a Matt Overton, who is a long snapper on the Jaguars, who will clearly not benefit from the fact that Kirk Cousins is getting guaranteed money. The long snapper is probably the exact opposite of the quarterback in terms of scarcity. Maybe not. Maybe maybe Matt Overton will in fact benefit from the Kirk Cousins deal. But the thing that's so interesting about the lack of guaranteed contracts in the NFL, and you wrote about this in a really great piece last year, is that it's as much a cultural thing as it is a product of the league rules. People often ask the question, why aren't NFL contracts guaranteed like they are in baseball and like in other sports? And the answer, as you wrote, is just because they aren't.
Right. They never have been. There's never been, and the owners have never been pressured into doing it. And what was interesting in that piece you referenced that I wrote last year is that there's nothing to prevent anyone from bargaining for a guaranteed contract. It's not in the rules that they can't happen. It's just that the players have never had the leverage to insist on them. And the owners are not willing to do that, at least across a five-year deal where, you know, the way the collective bargaining agreement is written, the owners would have to, you know, eat a significant portion of that money if a player sustained a devastating injury or something like that. And that's why I think it's not as precedent setting for other positions yet, because the risk is still placed on ownership if they were to give a fully guaranteed deal across a longer contract to a player at a position other than quarterback.
But let's also be clear here. What's happened is that management has leveraged this advantage, the built-in advantage, the cultural advantage, in which these players for their whole lives really have been yelled at by coaches in this sort of military discipline style environment and been told what to do every second of their professional lives. So that's part A. Part B is that management takes that and it grafts it onto the collective bargaining agreement. The 2011 collective bargaining agreement gave management enormous leverage. And management has pushed that leverage. They've created new sorts of contract styles and stipulations, injury splits where players are denied their full pay for the season if they get injured. There are other anti-player clauses in contracts now, like per-game bonuses. You don't get paid the full amount unless you play unless you're rostered and on the sidelines for a number of games. So it's not just that this is always the way it's been. It's that management has recognized that and then pushed its advantage even further.
Right. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head that the per game roster bonuses, there's contracts that automatically void. I mean, you know, Nick Foles' last deal in Kansas City automatically was going to void before he wound up in Philadelphia last year.
It's like an Inspector Gadget contract,
right?
It will self-destruct one season.
So, but we clearly still don't have. Drew Brees just signed a deal last week for below market value to help the Saints. I mean, that's the mentality. It gets back to the mentality question. He signed for 2 years and $50 million, and he really could have had them over a barrel if he wanted at this point in his career. But especially with their cap situation too, but he gave them some help, and you still have players willing to do that because of the attitude and the way they're programmed to a degree.
It's really fascinating how in the NBA as well, it's really in these salary cap sports how the money and the contracts just is entirely fake. Mm-hmm. Like the reported value of the contract is always fake, and it's always typically exaggerated because mm-hmm. it makes the agent look
right.
better.
Push by an agent. Yep.
We're seeing less of that in the NFL these days.
The reporters are getting smarter, but there's still going to be the incentives there. And it's still often the case. I mean, Dom, you wrote about this with the Richard Sherman contract, where it's just impossible to know how much the contract is worth because it's so incentive laden. But it's, I think we need to step back and realize as fans and as consumers of the game, how much the collective bargaining agreement and the salary cap rules have created
yes.
the way that these contracts mm-hmm. are structured. And when guys get 5 or 6 year deals, when the back half isn't guaranteed, it's entirely because of salary cap gymnastics, because you can spread out the value of the contract over 6 years and have a lower salary cap hit so you can sign more players, but it's all the money in the cap for each year. It's not real. The money assigned to the individual mm-hmm. players isn't real. And it does give teams and players some flexibility, and maybe there's some value in that. But I would think that, maybe except for ownership, for all parties, having a more rational system or a system that was more based on real money mm-hmm. would be better for everyone.
That's what's significant about the biggest significant thing about the Cousins deal. And I didn't touch on it in the piece I wrote last week, but in the one last year, is that there's something called a fully funding rule in the NFL, which mandates that any fully guaranteed money in a right. contract has to be placed into escrow by the team up front. And owners now this rule had a purpose 30, 40, 50 years ago when owners really were kind of ruffling through the couch cushions to pay players. That's not the case anymore. And they've still used that, though, as an excuse to avoid largely paying any contracts with any guaranteed money beyond 2 years.
So does all the $84 million have to be in escrow now?
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
That's what's significant about this, because owners would typically say that they couldn't do that. Clearly, they can.
Yeah.
That's exposed.
That's interesting.
And it's really incumbent on the union to change this entire system. Mm-hmm. I think at this point to use what's happened with Kirk Cousins and to lobby aggressively during the next collective bargaining agreement to change some of these archaic rules.
Yeah.
And I think that the culture of the NFL doesn't change until some of those rules get changed. Because what really is remarkable to me, Dom, is that you see people come out and say, people that are closely affiliated to the NFL, former players, and say guaranteed contracts would be bad. Matt Burke, former lineman with the Vikings, was quoted in a story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune last week saying that if we had guaranteed contracts in the NFL, I don't think our game would be as great as it is because it's just human nature. If you know you're getting paid no matter what, I think some guys won't put forth the effort. There's only so much money to go around. This guy went to Harvard?
Yeah.
That guy needs to be launched into the sun.
Yeah. I don't know why.
I mean, Mike Florio has had the, you know, the lawyer who runs Pro Football Talk has had the same take that that having guaranteed contracts would change the NFL. It wouldn't be a meritocracy anymore. Ross Tucker, another former player. What would be the financial motivation for any player that knows he is on his last contract to play with a serious injury?
I love this idea that
he shouldn't be playing with a serious injury anyway.
Right. But I love this idea that the NFL is some kind of meritocracy when the entire coaching and front office ranks are populated by fail sons. You know, I mean, Brian Schottenheimer just got another job. I mean, how does that happen in a true meritocracy? You know,
yeah. I mean, that Florio thing from 2015 is one of the dumbest things that's ever been on Pro Football Talk, which is really like a remarkable achievement.
Saying a lot.
But just how stupid, I don't think Mike Florio is stupid, but how stupid do you have to be to not understand that the NFL, even if you like exclude Brian Schottenheimer from the argument, if you don't understand that there are guys on rosters strictly because they're on good contracts and like veterans get cut rather than, you know, teams paying them more. It is not a meritocracy. Sports isn't a meritocracy. Like in baseball, in basketball, like the rookie deal where guys are per the CBA massively underpaid based on the value that they give teams is like a linchpin of roster construction.
Right.
And, you know, that is why, you know, teams don't want to guarantee paying money to like veteran guys or anyone. They want to, you know, have as little on the books as possible so they don't, you know, have these salary commitments that like if a guy gets hurt or if a guy, his production drops, they just want to be able to get rid of them and take on no risk.
Yeah.
And they also want to maintain the culture of insecurity that dominates in NFL locker rooms, that you know that you can be cut at any moment.
Right. And to expand on what Josh said, that rookie pay scale is low enough, too, that it incentivizes teams. And they know that, you know, why pay the veteran corner like a Richard Sherman $11 million when, you know, the draft's coming up and you can draft a guy 7, 8, 9 years younger, fresher, and pay him a slotted salary, you know, and that has the impact of affecting everything else. That, you know, on one hand, the argument was, well, we need the rookie wage scale so that Sam Bradford's not crushing the team's salary cap with a $50 million contract before he's played a snap. But on the flip side of that now is that the way it's affecting veterans down the road and making them much more expendable and replaceable.
All right, two things before we go. Hopefully you know the answer. I don't know the answer to this, but given the current system, do draftees have any leverage around pushing for guaranteed money? Because I was trying to think, all right, I think we can all agree and stipulate that like somebody like Aaron Rodgers would have the leverage here. But like the other place in which guys have leverage is when they are like immediately coming into the league and teams do not want, you know, the number one overall pick, you know, whether it's like Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or whoever going to be this year. They don't want that guy to like sit out the whole year. Could somebody like that push for guaranteed money, or are they like locked in such a way that it's not possible?
They're locked in, but interestingly, the first round picks, the top 20 or so, do get fully guaranteed deals for the 4 years.
Oh, so it's all guaranteed?
Yes.
Fascinating.
They're the one group that has had them. I think that was the concession that management made in creating this scale, was that the first round picks, it's negotiable, but typically it's been about the top 20, 22 that have gotten fully guaranteed across 4 years. And the second rounders, I think, get guarantees into year two, typically. But 3 through 7 have almost no leverage and are, you know, I don't think any of their money is guaranteed whatsoever.
All right. I sounded dumb there, but let's leave it in because sometimes I'm dumb and the audience needs to know that. My last question was, if we're talking about expanding what is possible here, what should Aaron Rodgers do, or what could Aaron Rodgers do to maybe even go beyond what Kirk Cousins did? Would it be asking for more years, or is there something that I'm not thinking of?
You know, it's an interesting question, because at this stage in his career, what would he want to do? Because another advantage for a quarterback, and this is where the quarterbacks have leverage in a shorter deal, is that he can go get a new contract in another year, 2 years, 3 years out, as opposed to 5 years. So,
right. And Kirk Cousins is only going to be 32 right. when this current contract expires after 3 years.
Right. So does Rodgers want to go that route and seek a guarantee with a shorter deal that allows him to renegotiate again when the cap has risen and his value will be that much greater? You know, or does he want the security? Does he want to be a team guy, and kind of lock himself into a 5 year deal that where, you know, he'll be earning less than he ought to within another year or two as other guys continue to get more deals. Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, other quarterbacks will be up for contracts in the next year or two like that. Be interesting to see how they play it out. I don't know that there's an easy answer to it, though, because it might depend on what that player wants, because they, you know, there's guys in their 30s, you know, who have earned a lot of money already at this point, and, you know, maybe they want to, quote unquote, chase the championship and help the team. And that's the problem. Tom Brady still playing at $16 million a year is a problem. And I don't know why the union doesn't address that.
Dom Cosentino writes for Deadspin. Dom, thanks a lot.
Thank you.